Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, Public Health for the Public. Hi, I'm Dr. Jim McDonald, Medical Director of the Rhode Island Department of Health.
I'm Dr. Philip Chan. Welcome, everyone.
And Dr. Chan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Dr. McDonald, it's a beautiful day. How are you?
I'm just living the dream. You know, it's one of those things where spring is in Rhode Island. It is just gorgeous outside, so it just makes me sunny inside, too. And it's great to have you. You're looking dapper, as always, today. And I'm excited today, so we're talking about babies. Babies are some of my favorite people on the planet. Dr. Chan, what is your position on babies?
Babies, how can you not love babies? I will say I am an adult physician, so I don't interact in the health and the care of babies much, but I do love babies. I have a 9 and 13-year-old that obviously I raised, and they're a delight. What's there more to say?
Yeah, babies are some of my, it's just fun. I mean, as a pediatrician, I still get to meet babies every week. And our theme today is there is a new baby in the house, but to share a room, not a bed. And, you know, we are really thrilled to have Margot Katz from the Rhode Island Department of Health with us today. So, Margot, welcome. Join us today. Margot, you know, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do with the Rhode Island Department of Health?
Sure. Thanks for having me, doctors. So I am an assistant health program administrator. And one of the programs that I coordinate is called Safe Sleep, which is really safe sleep for babies under the age of one.
Yeah, so it's a pleasure to have you on here, Margot. Thank you very much for joining us. So tell us, for people that may not be familiar with this issue, tell us about why sleep safety in infants, newborns is a thing. Why is it important?
Well, little babies are really vulnerable. And there are lots of vulnerabilities while they're sleeping. And we want to prevent sleep-related deaths in infants under the age of one so they can grow up and be healthy. These are definitely preventable things, things that parents and families can do to ensure that the baby's sleep area is safe and that parents are practicing safe sleep behaviors as well. It takes basically three forms, and we like to talk about it by saying the ABCs of safe sleep. A stands for baby is alone, does not sleep with anybody else or anything else in the baby's sleep area. B stands for placing baby on their back for both nap time and nighttime. And then C stands for crib, but it doesn't have to be a crib. It could be a bassinet or it could be like a pack and play. But the surface has to be firm and flat. So the ABCs of safe sleep is a great way to remember the three things that can keep baby safe during sleep.
Yeah, Margot, I like that, the ABCs of sleep. A baby certainly sleeping alone, sleeping on their back, sleeping in a crib, really easy stuff to remember. And I love the ABC approach, but it kind of reminds me of when I had my own first baby. So our first baby was born 22 years ago. I still remember it. And Margot, I just want to prime you. I'm going to ask you about your first baby in just a second, but I got to tell you my story about this. Like, you know, when Noah was born, I think it was true of all my kids. So like when I became a dad for the first time, it was in many ways a magical moment for me. Like I literally felt physically different, which is weird because I'm the guy, you know, but it was just huge for me to all of a sudden see this baby in front of me. And there was my baby. And keep in mind, Margot, as a pediatrician, I had seen thousands of babies, but now I was looking at mine. And it was funny, like as a dad, at the hospital I worked at, I was amazed in many ways. They even let me take the baby home because all of a sudden here I am, got my brand new baby and I'm driving home from the hospital with Gail. And I'm thinking like, I can't believe they let us take him home. This is so amazing. And it's amazing to me. We had our new baby and it was one of the things that I still remember is I don't know what we did for fun before we had a baby. Cause once we got our baby at home, all we did was baby, you know, that's all we did was we didn't watch TV. We didn't watch movies. We just hung out with our baby because there was nothing else to do. And this was 22 years ago. So I had to go back to work pretty quickly, you know, which was what it was at the time. You know, but as parents, we were pretty doting, pretty nervous, you know, but we were very careful about trying to keep our baby safe. But, you know, I'm just curious, Margot, what was it like for you when you had your first baby? Can you tell me that story?
Sure. Well, I'm 2 years behind you. My daughter, Daisy, is just turned 20. And I was actually out in California at the time. And for all intents and purposes, I was a single mom. So I remember being at the hospital, Santa Monica Hospital, giving birth to Daisy and having her in my bed at the hospital and nobody said a word. It was a really real before and after moment, just like you said. Very magical, but at the same time, surreal. I was now responsible for another life, another human being. But there was very little guidance back then in 2001 around sleep. I didn't receive any safe sleep education. I remember driving Daisy home from the hospital. It was like transporting a nuclear bomb. It was so intense, and I was so afraid of hurting her. And yet I slept with her. I remember feeding her in bed, feeding her on the couch, and falling asleep both times, or all the time, because I was so sleep deprived, which is a real experience for new parents. I was lucky that my family came to visit me from New York when Daisy was 10 days old. And so I had some help. The hospital gave me a doula for, I think, 4 hours. It was the gift, the hospital's gift, to give me 4 hours of a doula. She taught me to bathe Daisy. But otherwise, after my family left, I was really on my own. And it was certainly challenging to handle someone whose sleep patterns were different than mine. So I can definitely, I'm sure, just like you and Dr. Chan, you are a little closer to this 13 years ago as opposed to 22 or 20. But sleep deprivation is real in families.
It is real, isn't it? I think that happens too. And I'm going to ask Dr. Chan this question. Dr. Chan, Margot felt like she was transporting a nuclear bomb when she left the hospital. What was it like when you became a dad for the first time? You want to share what that was like?
You know, it's funny is I'm listening to you two talking. So my, you know, my daughter now is 13, about to turn 14 in July. And when she was born, I was actually an intern in residency, right? So internship and medical training is perhaps the busiest time ever potentially in one's career. And we were actually living in my in-laws. And I guess the first thing I want to say is just give kudos to my wife who did the majority of raising early on. Our two kids, and she had taken off a year or two from work. So she certainly deserves most of the credit early on there. But I just remember, you know, for people that know me, they've often mentioned how my kids have softened me. And it was really one of the first times in my life where I would, without even thinking, give my life for another human being. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you see this, the baby in front of you, and you just, they're helpless and they're totally dependent on you. And it's just, I mean, it is life-changing. And it's one of those things that you can never explain to people. You know, it's as much as we talk about it, it's something that you just have to be in that position to really understand. So definitely life-changing. I did briefly consider going into pediatrics. I was really drawn to actually pediatric oncology. I loved cancer. I really did think about oncology as a career. But at the end of the day, it just made me really sad when kids got sick. Made me really sad, and certainly when you know those circumstances where kids die. I mean, it's heartbreaking. So I became an adult doctor.
You know, it just makes me think about some of these concepts. And Dr. Chan, you remind me of, like, you know, when our kids come home from the hospital. Even as physicians, these are just precious gifts. And you know, I just think back of what Margaret was saying about the ABCs. Our baby needs to sleep alone, sleep on their back, and in a crib. And that wasn't always the case, Margaret. Like 30 years ago, I've been a pediatrician now for 31 years, which does make me officially old, by the way. But I remember in medical school and internship, we used to tell moms to sleep on their bellies. We told the babies to sleep on their bellies. Make sure the baby sleeps on their belly. And we said that because we didn't want them to spit up. But we learned that actually wasn't helpful. In other words, what we learned was that really wasn't a way to keep babies alive. There were some studies that came out of New Zealand that showed their rate of sudden infant death was much lower than in the United States. And one of the big issues was babies sleeping on their back. You know, and it really gets that larger issue of why babies need to sleep on their back a little bit. And I think that's really an important issue. You know, one of the things that I remember, you know, part of being an older pediatrician, I was practicing at one point in Tennessee. And I remember a story where, you know, I took care of a baby. Everything was going great. Came in for checkups, doing vaccinations. Everything was fine. And then at one point, the baby passed away from a sudden infant death experience. And what happened was, what often happens with newborn babies, with a mom tired and a baby tired. So the mom fell asleep on a couch with the baby sleeping with her on the couch. And then the baby suffocated next to the mom. And this is a tragic story. And it really gets to one of those things where I'll never forget seeing this mom afterwards. And it was just, you know, one of those things that she had to live with, but it was really hard to live with because obviously it's a terrible, terrible accident. But it's co-sleeping has its risk. doesn't it, Margot? And I think it really gets to this issue about why we worry so much about co-sleeping is when you sleep with a baby, you choose to bring risk. And it's one of the things I tell parents is, I don't mind your baby being on your belly. I just need the baby to be awake and an adult to be awake. So we're watching our baby because I don't mind babies being on their belly. But Margot, talk a little bit about why we worry so much about babies sleeping on their back or babies sleeping on their belly or babies co-sleeping. Why are we so worried about that?
Right. Well, when a baby sleeps on their stomach, there's a chance that their airway could be obstructed if they're soft bedding. They don't really have, very young babies don't have the strength in their necks to move their heads if their mouths are up against the sheets or blankets or the mattress. So we want babies to be on their backs. It's the safest way for them to grow up safe and healthy. But also when you co-sleep or bed share, you risk as a bigger person in the bed with baby, rolling over onto the baby. And we do see this from time to time. Also, if you're in an adult bed with the baby or a bed that is not really meant for a small baby, even a toddler bed, and there are blankets or other soft objects like pillows, baby can get wrapped up in the sheets or the pillows or the blankets, and that could impede their breathing as well. So there are all sorts of risk factors that go along with bed sharing and co-sleeping. And these are absolutely tragic events that can be prevented by keeping baby in their own dedicated sleep area with nothing else in that area. And that goes against our instincts as parents, right? We want to create beautiful areas for baby to sleep. We receive gifts. Matching sheets and pillows and blankets and quilts. But really, for that first year, what we want to see to keep baby as safe as possible is baby on a firm flat surface with no blankets or pillows, just a taut sheet around a firm mattress.
Yeah, thank you, Margot. And I think, you know, in preparation for today's episode, I was also reviewing how common this was. And so per the CDC, there's about 3,500 sudden unexpected infant deaths in the United States a year, generally occurring less than 1 year old. And these are deaths that have no immediate cause. So it's definitely happens. And I know that we've had a few here in Rhode Island as well. So it's something we certainly need to be aware of. Let me ask you this, Margot, what are some practical ways to maximize joy, you know, in the setting of a newborn baby when a baby first comes to home?
Well, it is a joyful time and it helps to have a plan before baby's born as to how baby's going to sleep and how you're going to feed baby and comfort baby as well, because the instinct to bring baby into bed so that everybody can get rest is a prevalent risk, and I completely understand it because I lived it. But the plan would be something like have somebody else, if you have a partner in the house or other family members, to have them get up with you during the feeding to keep an eye on you and baby to make sure that you don't fall asleep or that if you do, they can take baby. Another strategy might be to set an alarm on your phone. And so that in case you do fall asleep, you can wake up. Something that we would love to see are sort of networks of new parents and grandparents and other caregivers who can reach out to one another to create a system where parents aren't really alone, that there's somebody else who can keep an eye on them. You know, in Rhode Island, we see about a dozen deaths a year. And although that number seems small, and we are a small state, the impact of every death cannot be underestimated. It extends beyond just the family to the community as well, and to the state as a whole. So our work is really focused on trying to help families find these strategies and implement them, and have the support available to help them keep their baby safe during sleep. We have a home visiting program at the Department of Health that can be very, very helpful to families with children under the age of four. some of our home visiting programs have free pack and plays that they can offer to families who don't have a safe place for baby to sleep. Can I share that number for family visiting?
Please do. Yeah. So how would someone contact the Rhode Island Home Visiting Program for a new baby?
Sure. So they can call 222-5960 and families can self-refer themselves. They can, healthcare providers can refer a family. The family comes to the home. Lately, it's been through through telehealth, but they can certainly come to the home and deliver the pack and play if needed. We also have sleep sacks, which helps families avoid using blankets in the crib for the first year. And these are free as well. We also have, and I'll show you, even though this is going to be shared by audio, we have safe sleep books that the Department of Health and DCYF have collaboratively purchased and given to all the 5 birthing hospitals in the state, who in turn give these books to families who've just delivered a new baby. We have purchased over 40,000 of these books since 2018. And it's sort of dual use. It promotes reading to baby, but it also promotes a safe sleep message and tips and tricks to help babies sleep safe, especially in that first year.
I just want to understand that phone number a little better there. Is the phone number 401-222-5960? And if someone calls that number, is there any cost for any of these resources?
Family visiting is free and it's voluntary. And families can be engaged for as long as they want. And there are nurses and social workers who can come out to the house. It's really an incredible benefit that I certainly could have used 20 years ago.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice benefit too. It sounds like something where, you know, one of the things people are looking for when you, it's so funny, like as a pediatrician, a lot of times, you know, I tell moms, like, often when someone has a baby, they often say to you, look, if there's anything you need, please let me know. But quite frankly, as a mom, we're so tired, and or as a dad, we're so tired, we're like, I don't know what we need. I just need to get through today, basically. You know what I mean? And I think, so one of the things I tell moms when I see children at the 3-day visit or even the 2-week visit is, you know, before you have your baby or even afterward, just have a list. You know, when someone says there's anything you need help with, say, show up Saturday at 1 o'clock with a vacuum cleaner and just take it from there. That's all I'm looking for. And if you give people jobs, my experience is your family and friends really want a job to do it. You know, another little tidbit of advice I give new moms is sleep when your baby sleeps, you know, because you're working 24 hours a day till that baby's about 12 pounds. Because when, you know, babies don't really sleep 8 hours at night until they're about 12 pounds. And I just think if you can sleep when your baby sleeps, so you can do those 24-hour days. And you know, part of that, one of the things I make sure moms know is like, you know, it's going to be about a 10-week journey where you're up 24 hours, but it's only a 10-week journey. It's much harder than when you have other kids. You know, if you have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old at home and you say to mom, take a nap while your baby's napping, it's like, oh my gosh, that isn't going to happen. Another little tidbit I offer people though is try to keep your fluids up. You know, drink when your baby's drinking. You know, for folks who are breastfeeding, that's really the best way to nourish your baby. You know, just have a big bottle of water so you can drink while your baby's drinking, keep your fluids up. You know, I think those are important practical tips as well. You know, I think, you know, the 3 things I think matter the most is get other people to help you, drink when your baby's drinking, sleep when your baby's sleeping. You do those 3 things, you've come a long way. But some of that's harder during the time of COVID, Margo, in particular, isn't it? Because right now with COVID, we're not really welcoming visitors in our home with a new baby. You know, and that presents a challenge, doesn't it? You know, and I just think about the joy of having a baby. But have you noticed how COVID has affected the joy of parents when they have a new baby, how it's been a bit of a wrinkle for that? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, during COVID, there were a lot of women who had to deliver alone. And I'm sure that was not something that they expected. It certainly wasn't part of the plan. And I'm sure that heightened the anxiety that comes with having a baby and being a new parent. And then going home and not being able to take advantage of family coming to celebrate the new baby and to help out. You know, we want families to feel good about asking for help. It's okay to ask for help. And it really does take a village. But COVID has been so isolating. And for families with new babies, I think particularly so.
Yeah, I think COVID has certainly affected many people, many different ways, many different settings. And I think this is an example. I am reminded, of course, about one small silver lining of the pandemic, if there is one, which is that this virus does not really seem to affect younger kids that much. Unlike other respiratory viruses where newborns, young kids are certainly at much higher risk because of their small airways, we have, I think, gone somewhat lucky in that this virus does not seem to affect kids as significantly, certainly as older adults. So one silver lining, if there is any. But bringing it back to share a room, not a bed. Why is it so important to share a room with a newborn and not a bed? And you've touched on this a little bit.
Yeah. So that's actually, I think that we in Rhode Island invented that phrase. I may be wrong. I don't think we've copywritten it, but it's a great phrase. We've actually did a video with director Alexander Scott a couple of years ago with some home visitors promoting that message. But putting baby in the adult's bedroom, in the parent's bedroom or caregiver's bedroom for the first year of life, or at least the first 6 months, allows for safe bonding, allows for easier feeding, because the bed, the baby's sleep area is right there next to the parent's bed. So that, we think, is the message that that is really good to land on, because it promotes all the positives of having a new baby and parenting in a safe way.
You know, Margo, I think just to summarize our episode today, I think about the ABCs. Our babies really should be sleeping alone, sleeping on their back, sleeping in a crib. But you really do want to share a room, not a bed. And I think you're right. You know, having that baby in the same room as the mom in particular for the first 6 to 12 months, it creates great bonding. You get a chance to attend to everything. You know, one of the things I often tell parents though, is at some point that baby's going to sleep through the night. And it's usually around 10 weeks, sometimes sooner, sometimes a little bit later. But the point is, you know, when they're about 12 pounds, you just only let them kind of sleep through the night. They work out their own issues and they learn to fall asleep. And so it is a bit of a sprint for those first 10 weeks or so that can be exhausting. But I think, you know, I think all of us would agree having a new baby is extremely joyous. It's a beautiful experience. And we really just want to do to keep our baby safe. And a lot of that has to do with just babies sleeping alone, sleeping on their back and sleeping in a crib. It's been fun to talk to you about that today. Dr. Chan, we always go to you for our final word. Do you have a final word for us for today's episode?
Yeah. Thank you again, Margo, so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Dr. McDonald, thank you. So in closing, I want to leave everyone with a moment of Zen to consider throughout the rest of your day. And here it is. There is no path to happiness. Happiness is the path. So be happy with what you have and keep a positive attitude. Thank you all and be safe.
I'm Dr. Jim McDonald, Medical Director of the Rhode Island Department of Health, joined by Dr. Phil Chan. Our guest was Margo Katz. I want to thank Carol Stone, our Technical Director, and Jose Garcia, our Executive Producer.